Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Board approves law enforcement items. With three Hector County ISD police officers recently added, the Board of Trustees on Tuesday approved three new vehicles from Sewell Ford for a total of $132,675. Trustees also approved $86,691 for 33 soft and hard body armor from Dana Safety Supply, with grant funds coming through the state. These will go to frontline officers, supplemental agenda material said. The board also approved allowing the police department to go for a fiscal year 2024 Safe Neighborhoods grant. The opportunity to apply for this grant under the government's office will enable ECISD to develop evidence-based activities to prevent violent crimes in targeted geographic areas in order to reduce violence, crime, and incarceration rates, the material says. Discussions of the virtual instructional coaching item caused some confusion among Hector County ISD board members, resulting in the item being pulled until next month. Cost, the fact that the coaches would not be coming to campuses in person, the hour a week time spent with teachers virtually and being able to get out of the contract, were concerns expressed by trustees. The money would come from federal elementary and secondary school emergency relief funds. The spring pilot would total $30,000, Director of Talent Development Jesse Garcia said. Supplemental agenda material indicated it would be $400,000 each year for 2 years, but Garcia said the district allocated $400,000 for 2 years for virtual coaching. Garcia noted that Edifying Teachers does not have a contract yet and that the teachers who would be coached have not been selected. We would pay for services rendered upon determining a scaling plan. We would pilot the work with 20 teachers and, if it went well, use the $400,000 to continue to fund for more teachers, Garcia said in a text message after the meeting. The purpose is to improve teaching in the classroom. Teachers in the pilot would be coached for an hour a week. Garcia said the program is interactive and teachers would also get weekly check-ins. Garcia said there are not enough instructional coaches for all teachers in ECISD for teachers that need them. Leveraging lessons from the pandemic, they looked at virtual coaching, which is a new technology. They have chosen a company, Edifying Teachers, through a request for proposals. If the pilot program was successful in the first year, ECISD would explore it further. Trustee Delma Abelos said it didn't matter where the funding was coming from. It sounded like a lot of money. Tammy Hawkins, also a trustee, said teaching is a hands-on profession and she had an issue with the tutors never coming to Odessa. Vice President Carol Gregg said she wanted someone to look at the contract. Trustees also approved an election order for the May 6th board election and heard a thank you from Sheena Salcido, Vice President of the Hector County TSTA, representing 800 members, for the work the board does and improvements they have approved for pay. Trustees also heard data from the Texas Academic Performance Reports, or TAPR, on the district's performance, graduation rate, and a variety of other items. Education Partnership. With new people at the helm of the Early Childhood Action and Grow Our Own Networks, the groups are set to move ahead. Shelby Smith is the coordinator of ECAN, and Kendall Gray, the coordinator of Grow Our Own. Gray is also working on redesigning the partnership's website and working on social media. The Early Childhood Action Network meetings will start this month on a bi-monthly basis. Both organizations are under the umbrella of the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin. The Education Partnership recently completed a strategic plan. We're looking to improve the quality of child care seats, the quantity of seats that we have in our area, as well as kindergarten readiness, ensuring that students in our area are entering kindergarten ready and prepared. If you think about it, the ECAN network is like the big table when you think of that birth to five space. The ECAN is pediatricians, child care centers, other community members like nonprofits, other resources that our community has access to, and then the school districts as well, Smith said. Within the ECAN, we've also started Child Care Coalition meetings. The Midland County Child Care Coalition has been up and running for, I would say, the last year. They meet monthly, and so that's with the school districts, other community partners, and then child care centers. It's an opportunity for those centers to come and receive different things once a month. We've had people with the school district present ideas that they can take back to their classroom, just different things like that, Smith added. The Ector County Early Childhood Coalition has met a couple of times, but it will start meeting monthly this month as well as on the first Thursday of every month. Smith said the makeup of the committee will depend on what's needed. It just depends on what feedback we get and what they would like to get from these meetings. We don't ever want to just make it feel like another meeting. If there's a resource that they feel that they're lacking, we want them to be able to get that for them. For Grow Our Own, Gray said there is a lot to go after. I think our overall goal is just that when students graduate, they are ready to enter college or whatever post-secondary education path they choose, or they're ready to enter the workforce. We're working a lot on building out those pathways because we recognize that there's kids that a four-year college degree is not what they want. So we're focusing a lot on getting a credential or certification in high school. So when they do graduate, they can have these higher paying jobs. Really, overall, we need to create a workforce, and that's why we're growing our own, because we need a workforce here, Gray said. It's typically easier to get people to stay close to home if they have grown up here. Gray said they have started a college, career, military readiness, professional learning community. We've invited all of the districts that we serve, so Region 18 Education Service Center, plus any of the districts that the Permian Strategic Partnership serves. We've hosted two meetings so far, and we invited the superintendents. We've had a lot of them come together, and then they tell whoever else on their teams to join. We just get to talk about the data and how to use it because we're trying to get everyone on the same path because we all have the same problems, Gray said. Both Smith and Gray have been with the partnership for a short time, but they have roots in this area. Smith said she has worked for both Ector County and Midland ISDs. Much of her background is in special education. Gray worked for Midland Development Corporation before joining the Education Partnership. Since she doesn't have a background in education, Gray said she has been learning a lot and hopes to help people decide to stay here. I never thought I would stay here after I left for college. I graduated during COVID, so that really put a damper in all my plans. I ended up getting a job here, and now I'll probably never leave because I love it so much, Gray said. Both want to give back to the community that has given so much to them, but also coming from it from a perspective of, I have an opportunity to make an impact on children's lives. I probably wouldn't have had that opportunity. When I was at the school district, yes, I was able to make a difference, but I feel like this could really make some big changes for students entering the school districts and child care, Smith said. Smith started out as a speech assistant, taught third grade, special education, and from there became a diagnostician. Her last role with MISD was as child find coordinator, where she identified children 3 to 5 years old who met eligibility requirements for special education. Early childhood has always been my heart. That's where I started as a speech assistant, and that's just always been where my heart is, Smith said. Gray added that they both now get to serve not only their hometown of Odessa, but the broader community as well into eastern New Mexico. Smith and Gray are Permian High School graduates. Smith earned a bachelor's degree in communication science disorders from Abilene Christian University and a master's in special education from Sewell Ross State University. Gray earned a bachelor's degree in marketing from Texas Tech University. We don't have a direct impact on the students, but we have access to those who do, Gray said. So if we can help them figure out the best way to use their resources to make an impact, it's going to improve quality of life. Education as a quality of life thing, and it's just going to make everything better. There is a culture in the basin that you don't need to finish high school when you can work in the oil field and make a lot of money. But Smith and Gray are trying to change that. We're working on a project right now with Wonder Strategies for Good. It's called the Pathways Narrative Project. We're trying to shift the narrative of I don't need any post-secondary education to make a good living in the Permian Basin. But we think that you need some sort of post-secondary education, whether that's a six-month certificate through OC or community college, or that's just an associate degree, but you need something to be able to have those employable skills. We're working on that right now, and it's very interesting. We have a grant for that. When I started, that was one of the things that I really enjoyed. That's what I really love doing right now, is shifting that narrative. Again, we're trying to get people to come back and work here. It all leads to the same thing, Gray added. Smith said she thinks a lot of that mindset is where we live and that the workforce is linked to energy. But we also need people in those jobs that aren't energy. We need nurses and teachers. There's a need for all of that here. She added that things aren't going to change overnight. We're both here now, and we're both in our roles. Finally, someone doing both of our jobs. So now we get to help make that change, Gray said. Especially in education, she said, something is always changing. Creating the buy-in from our stakeholders to want to have a part in that big change is big, Smith said. MCHS to host key driver education program. Medical Center Health System announced on Tuesday it's hosting its next key driver education program from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. January the 28th in the ECHD boardroom. The key driver education program is designed for young drivers as well as their parents or guardians. It is focused on preventing common factors in young driver motor vehicle crashes. The program includes discussions with experts and people affected by young driver crashes, hands-on activities, and a behind-the-scenes tour of the MCH Trauma Center. Upon completion, each participant will receive a certificate of completion as proof of attendance that may be redeemed for community service hours. OC Board hears policy recommendations. The Odessa College Board of Trustees heard about recommended personnel and grading policy changes during its workshop Tuesday. Vice President of Administrative Services Ken Zartner said there were 3 different policies for modification and 2 different policies modified on behalf of the college and its business operations. One policy is meant to spell out the election schedule, so there will be specific terms and election dates as mandated by the state. Trustee terms are up every 6 years, Zartner said. The next policy specifies the board's designee to may waive provisions addressing alcohol in certain circumstances at events off campus. The policy also covers alcohol and controlled substance on college property or in college vehicles. So even if you're on college business out of state, the policy applies, Zartner said. They also heard about alcohol and drug policies related to student conduct. The next one is same thing with alcohol, but it's for our community. Revisions to clarify rules related to using, possessing, controlling, or manufacture in terms of distribution, selling, or being under the influence of alcohol that apply to visitors, Zartner said, along with state requirements and guidance from the Texas Association of School Boards. OC also updates its policies as its operations change. They also want to add language to their student grievance policy to give it more flexibility. When a student files an official grievance or complaint, we didn't feel that we were clear enough on who was the responsible person to receive that complaint and then who was the next person to review that complaint. We don't have thousands of complaints by any means, but there are thousands of different situations that can occur, so it's hard to build a policy to make sense for every one of those things. We wanted to take out some language that we don't use anymore, such as academic counselor or chairperson or all of those different things, and give the discretion to the person who is receiving the complaint to validate what those next levels would be, Zartner said. The updated policy would be for complaints to go to Vice President for Student Services, Kim McKay, for example, and she would delegate that to the person who could best handle it. This affects level 1 and 2 grievances. But Zartner said level 3, which goes to the president, and 4, which goes to the board, remain the same. Zartner said another policy on grading had not been updated since 1998. The new rules would take effect immediately, McKay said. This policy does address academic achievement, grading, and credit. One of the primary things that we use this for is to issue grades that align with the grades that students or other institutions or employers may see on a student's transcript. We had to update the grades because we had implemented a few new grades during the pandemic so that we weren't penalizing students for withdrawals, also acknowledging that they may have needed an institutional pause during the pandemic process. That is now on this particular policy. It was also updated to reflect the new honors program so that a receiving institution or an employer would know that the course a student took were honors courses at Odessa College, McKay said. They also made some changes in language. This policy heavily used the word scholastic. We've changed all of that to academic, and then we have taken a new approach in our academic prohibition and academic suspension. These were very punitive approaches that the college used, similar to the ones that we were familiar with in our undergrad experiences. But the college has taken a restorative approach to students who may not be performing well academically. We have a success coach that's dedicated to students who fall below 2.0. Develop an academic achievement plan to get them back on track. As you all know, we now are leveraging our Kuntz dollars to actually provide scholarships to students who may need a second chance academically. It also addresses attendance in traditional classes and what the expectations are, not only for students, but also for employees, McKay said. We need employees to take what we call first week attendance. By law, we're mandated to take that as part of our financial aid obligations. That has been updated to reflect that mandate, and then it also talks some about records for our students and where they're kept. Finally, this is a practice that, unfortunately, we have to use more often than we'd like. When we're informed of a student who has passed away, we have a process to close and lock their records. This process needed to be updated to ensure that we added our digital and electronic communication so that the student's family was no longer receiving updates or notifications from Odessa College digitally, which could be text, email, and other ways, she added. Trustee Trudy Lewis asked if this would make OC's policy consistent with other community colleges throughout the state. McKay said that wasn't necessarily it. We've taken a different approach to students who may be falling behind academically. It's one of Dr. Williams's goals to remove the F grade from our vernacular and from our grading transcript, and this is one step for us to give students who may have struggled in the beginning a second chance academically. Often when students fall below 2.0, financial aid and other funding is no longer available to them, and they have to sit out a semester if they are placed in academic suspension and or probation. So what this does is allow the student to continue with the support that they need to be successful. We know if they leave, they're likely to never come back. We also know if they leave here with debt, they probably will never come back, McKay said. She added that OC still does have an F grade. That's what brings the GPA to below 2.0, McKay said. Nationally, McKay said this kind of move is supported. I think Dr. Williams can tell you in some of his national work, people really support this initiative. They aren't quite sure how to go about it, so I think this is a good framework to change how we look at students who may be coming to us and have a poor academic experience, but still have the options and still have the desire to continue to try again, she said. President Gregory Williams said OC is a leader in this work, not only in Texas, but nationally. We're trying to be smart about it, Williams said. As Kim said, these are baby steps that we're taking. We don't want to be too radical about it, but just try to ease the burden and trying to ease the shame of students as much as we can. Once you reach the requirements, we celebrate that. But until you do, you are still becoming, and we want to help you make your burden as light as possible, Williams said. McKay said she would think the faculty is more grateful for the changes than the practice that was in place before. This practice allows us to let the faculty know, notify the faculty that this is a student on academic probation and they're in a case management program. These are the expectations we have of the student and of you. Whereas before, unless you were a faculty that went out and looked at GPA and cumulative GPA, you may not have known that student was struggling, McKay said. Williams said he thinks it eases the faculty's burden. I think it allows them to be even more authentic when they know that simply because I give this grade, it doesn't mean that I'm doing permanent harm. I think they can be more honest. I think they can be more authentic, knowing that there are resources available to help, he added. Board Chair Gary Johnson said they want everyone who attends OC to be successful. It's not like if someone flunks out, that's it for them. We're going to do everything we can to make sure that they complete and they're successful, Johnson said. Death notices. James Milford Howard passed away on Friday, January the 13th, after a lengthy illness. Jerry Rodney Crane, age 69, died Tuesday, January the 10th, in Odessa. Frederico Alvarado, age 88, of Odessa, died Saturday, January the 14th. Saul Ramirez Carrillo, of Odessa, age 90, passed away on Thursday, January the 12th. Bonnie Sue Jones Stubbs, age 84, of Odessa, died Saturday, January the 15th.
This is the Dear Abby column. Boyfriend turns to booze, drugs after baby's birth. Dear Abby, I'm having a big problem with my boyfriend. We had a baby 5 months ago, and since then he has changed drastically. He previously had a problem with addiction, but had a handle on it. He told me the baby was powerful motivation. My pregnancy was blissful, and he was attentive and caring. I know babies are stressful, and ours had colic, so we had many nights filled with screaming. I do most of the work with the baby. I quit my job to be a stay-at-home mom and nurse him. The only time my boyfriend takes care of the baby is for me to take a shower. He has been drinking every night, and now he's doing marijuana as well. He is pretty funny when he's high, but I don't trust him to take care of our son when he's that way. He is also addicted to his phone. When I try to tell him how I feel, he gets defensive. He accuses me of trying to start problems. He also lies about his addictions. I only recently found out about some of his lies, and now I'm having a hard time believing anything he says. This is not how I wanted my life to be. This is not what I wanted for our baby. I'm trying to decide whether it's better to put up with it or leave. I'd have to get a job and find childcare. The thought of my son in daycare makes me sick, but so does being treated this way. Please advise me. Signed, Troubled New Mom. Dear Mom, face it, your boyfriend has backslid, and you can no longer trust him to be truthful with you. Your problems will never be resolved if they can't be discussed without contention. Start looking for reliable daycare for the baby and for a job. If you do, you will have a head start on the inevitable. If you and this man separate, he will be legally responsible for contributing to his son's support. It may also be the jolt he needs to get straight again. Dear Abby, I'm a queer woman who has a crush on a girl. Gwen is kind, outgoing, and very intelligent. The poetry she writes is brilliant and sometimes soul-crushing. We are close friends and bonded over our writing. My wife and I have talked openly about my feelings for this girl, and my wife understands why I like her. The problem is, Gwen is heterosexual. She has said, partly in jest, that it's oppressive that she's straight. Without going into too much detail, she has had a bad time with past relationships and is presently single. I am bound and determined to nip this crush in the bud. I feel telling Gwen about it would be unethical. I know for certain that she's straight, but my brain refuses to shake this feeling. I'm terrified that it will ruin our friendship. What do I do? Signed, Crushing in Indiana. Dear Crushing, do the same thing that other mature married people do. Step back from something that could threaten not only your relationship with Gwen, but also your marriage. Whether Gwen finds her heterosexuality to be oppressive, said in jest, or is bi-curious, should not affect your creative relationship with her. If you feel you cannot control your emotions, take a step back and see her less often, if at all. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.